Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of my Thursday evening Dhamma talk on December 6th, 2018. This talk is on the Bhava Sutta and is a second of three talks on the meaning of becoming. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. Good evening. Tonight's talk is the second talk on the meaning of becoming. Lay down here, boats. And last week's talk on the Loka Sutta, the first talk in this series, gets into the idea of becoming just a little bit deeper. And I want to touch on something that's said in that sutta. But to lay the foundation for this, lay down, boats. Come on. The Buddha awakened to dependent origination. The primary sutta on that is called the Paticca-samuppada Sutta. It is primarily because of a misunderstanding or intentional misapplication or intentional mistranslation of dependent origination. Let's see who that's joining right there. Can't tell. Well, I see someone's joined. I don't see a name on there. And they're off again. I'm going to give you a minute to see if you can get reconnected. I think someone's there, but I can't tell who. And they're not showing up on the screen. Anyway, let me start over. This is the second talk in a series of three talks. Lay down. On the meaning of becoming. This is really a key theme of the Buddha's Dhamma. In fact, you could really take the essence of what the Buddha is teaching and bring it down to this one thing. What am I going to become in this moment? And what we become in this moment is determined by what we hold in mind. And the Buddha taught that as Dhamma practitioners, what we hold in mind, exclusive of anything else, is an Eightfold Path to guide our thinking, guide our actions, and to guide our entire Dhamma practice. He developed the Eightfold Path because of what he awakened to. And what he awakened to is defined in dependent origination as it is ignorance of Four Noble Truths that leads to all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing disappointment and suffering. So let me just read the 12 links of dependent origination just to set the scope and the purpose of what these suttas are about, and really the entire Buddha's teaching. The Buddha awakened to these profound understandings. From ignorance of Four Noble Truths, as a requisite condition, come fabrications. Lay down. So as you can see, this first link leads to all the problems that we create in our own mind, because out of this initial ignorance, we create a fabricated or perverted view of ourselves in relation to the world. So anything that follows from that, any conclusion, any speculation, any supposition, any decision, any identity that we create from that initial ignorance is going to be fabricated, and so always prone to suffering. And from that starting off point, from ignorance, we can only become further ignorant unless something is introduced so that we can recognize ignorance and abandon it. And that's why the Buddha taught an Eightfold Path. So from ignorance as a requisite condition comes fabrications. From fabrications as a requisite condition comes consciousness. And this is another important point of clarity. The consciousness that the Buddha is talking about here and everywhere is not some grand cosmic consciousness, not some unity consciousness, not some consciousness that we all share a part of somehow. It's consciousness rooted in, follow the steps, rooted in that initial ignorance, informed now by fabrication. So it's ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance. From that consciousness, as a requisite condition, comes name and form. The Pali word, Sanskrit word, is namarupa, but it simply means name and form, meaning self-identifying with this form. And in the context of the Buddha's teaching, it's simply self-identification with wrong views. So from consciousness as a requisite condition comes name and form. From name and form as a requisite condition comes the sixth sense base, our five physical senses, and that sixth sense of consciousness, but that's simply ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. But again, follow the progression from ignorance now. This is not a dependent origination, despite what those that follow the Abhidhamma foolishly claim that it's because of the misinterpretation, that it's a creation myth, and even the modern mistranslations that completely abrogate what the Buddha taught as dependent origination to fit their own views and really have nothing to do with what the Buddha taught as dependent origination. And it's really at this point. It's not a creation myth. It's not a myth about how human beings come to be in the world. He's talking about a person rooted in ignorance. And so from ignorance of Four Noble Truths through this progression, now as a fabricated view of ourselves in relation to the world has contact through our senses, this is the point we are in dependent origination and what we're becoming, rooted in that ignorance. So from name and form as a requisite condition comes the sixth sense base. From the sixth sense base comes contact with the world. It's simple and direct, and sometimes the utter simplicity makes it hard to grasp what were the importance of this. But again, it's important to keep it in context. When we lose the context, we lose the entire teaching here. From ignorance now, my senses are coming in contact with the world around me, and I'm interpreting what is coming through those senses from the point of view of ignorance. And so anything that I'm interpreting now and identifying with is fabricated and can only lead to further ignorance and further stress and suffering. So from contact as a requisite condition comes feeling. I'm not going to get too much deeper into dependent origination because I want to get to the sutta. From feeling as a requisite condition comes craving. Once we have that, once something has aroused our interest, and if we feel that it's given us pleasure, we want more of it. And if we feel that it's taking away or mind take away from our pleasure, we want less of it. And the biggest part of that is we are ambiguous to many things simply because they don't catch our attention because we're so distracted. Bodhi, lay down. Comes contact. From contact as a requisite condition comes clinging and maintaining. So again, watching the progression from ignorance through our senses, we find something that we like or we dislike, and we start creating identities about it. We're self-identifying. And in a very real way, as the Buddha describes it, we have joined now with our suffering. We self-identified with our suffering. And once we do that, once we create an identity about what we like and what we don't like, we start clinging to that, to those desires. And clinging is an aspect of maintaining. So from clinging and maintaining comes becoming. And that's the important point here. And there's never a modifier in this description, because in the context, it doesn't need a modifier. People would ask, well, becoming what? Becoming further ignorant. Unless something happens to interrupt that ignorance giving rise to fabrications, and that's the Eightfold Path. So just to continue the dependent origination, from clinging and maintaining comes becoming. From becoming, the next link is from becoming comes birth. Now, again, this isn't a creation myth like most the Abhidhamists would insist, or even the Mahayanists who misinterpret this. It's not physical birth. It's not a creation myth. It's giving birth to another moment rooted in ignorance. Again, remember the progression. And then the last link in this chain, from birth as a requisite condition, from giving birth to another moment rooted in ignorance, comes all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering. And that's the 12 links of dependent origination. And it points to the point of these talks, it points to this underlying theme of becoming that runs throughout the Buddhist teaching, but is, I was a student of Buddhism for many, many, many years, and I never even heard the word becoming mentioned once, and certainly not in the context of dependent origination, because that's never clearly defined anyway. It's always presented as a creation myth or as something to prove erroneously that we are all interdependent or interconnected or interbe. It doesn't say anything about that. I just read it. So what the Buddha awakened to is that it's ignorance of Four Noble Truths, that leads to all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering. So he taught that Eightfold Path to interrupt ignorance and bring wisdom and understanding to a mind that is once rooted in ignorance. That points to the potential that each and every moment in our lives has. Each moment holds the potential to either become further ignorant and continue suffering, or to become awakened. And that really is the only choice that we have, and it's the choice that is framed by the Eightfold Path. Now, I just want to read one thing from the Loka Sutta that I covered last week. Bookmark it, but give me a second. Here it is. Look at the world. Human beings afflicted with ignorance crave for and cling to becoming. All forms of becoming anywhere, in any way, are impermanent, stressful, and always subject to change. Knowing this, the arising and the passing away, from right view, craving for becoming and non-becoming is abandoned. That last line, or the line becoming or non-becoming, is so important and so misunderstood. What does it mean by non-becoming? The Buddha addresses that in so many suttas. We just went through a series of seven talks on jhana, and in that sutta, in every one of those suttas, the Buddha talks about establishing ourselves in imaginary non-physical planes, and the description of the Buddha's own awakening, his noble search, the Arya Pariyasana Sutta. He covers the same thing. In fact, many of the suttas we've been going over at Cross River Meditation Center in my recent talks, because it's such an important point. Craving for non-becoming means deciding that, and the preference of this also is that we crave for becoming anything other than self, meaning in this moment, I'm not good enough or I need more. And particularly in modern Buddhism, this is why there's always new and novel approaches to what Buddhism might be. And we're in the compulsion now is, how are we going to redefine and constantly redefine Western Buddhism? Well, there's no need to, because the Buddha already described a complete Buddhist path. But that's part of non-becoming, of thinking I need to acquire something or add something to myself to make me more of something. And in this case, a more well-rounded or more knowledgeable Buddhist. Again, remember this: the context that the Buddha's teaching here. He's teaching that any time that we attach ourselves to any thought, view, or idea that I need to embellish this with is rooted in ignorance and is a fabrication itself and can only lead to further becoming ignorant. So that's the important part. Excuse my emphasis, but it's so important. And I see that as the singular problem between what the Buddha taught and what has developed over the years. And it took me a while to see this in myself. But whenever we see from a fabricated view that I need to acquire something or add something, or as he told Ananda in the Upada Sutta about wise associations, associate with people that we feel will somehow enhance our Buddhist practice when they're practicing anything other than what the Buddha taught. That's all part of this non-becoming. So let me get to, and then in the Loka Sutta, from the abandonment of craving for becoming and non-becoming comes unbinding. It's such a simple and direct teaching. Unbinding from what? Unbinding from that initial ignorance that leads to all manner of suffering. But it has to be that step, that conscious step rooted in conviction to the Dhamma, has to be taken. Abandoning craving for and clinging to becoming and non-becoming must be recognized, and it must be taken. And then we take the moment rooted in ignorance, giving birth to another moment rooted in ignorance, no matter how wonderful we might feel about what we're doing, then we can become awakened. Let me see who else is there. Ah, oh, Lorna's here too. Okay, I'm going to unmute you both and invite you on in just a moment. So let me get to the Bhava Sutta, because we did go over the Loka Sutta last week. This is another one of those three most significant suttas, because even during the Buddha's time, now he was teaching, hearing directly from the Buddha, and even Ananda was confused, and many of the other monks and nuns of the early Sangha were confused exactly what this means by becoming. And it's a very simple concept, but because we have such a veil of ignorance and we're so stuck in it, we simply can't see what is meant by this. So, excuse me.
Excuse me.
So in this sutta, Ananda, the Buddha's cousin and chief attendant, who heard every talk the Buddha ever gave, was still confused. I'm guessing there's no way to really know the timeline, but I'm guessing this is rather early during the Buddha's dispensation. On one occasion, Ananda went to the Buddha, bowed and sat to one side. He was unsure of the meaning of becoming, and so asked the Buddha, "Becoming, becoming, to what extent is there becoming?" The Buddha replies, "Ananda, if there were no karma ripening within the feeling property, would the feeling property be noticed?" So again, remember that one of the reasons why I went through dependent origination again is to put that in context. What does feeling precede? What does feeling follow? Is contact. And so from contact to feeling to craving to clinging and maintaining to birth to the whole manner of suffering. If there were no karma ripening within the feeling property, would the feeling property even be noticed? So again, I have to define karma in its correct term. Karma is the present moment unfolding of past intentional actions modified or moderated by what we're holding in mind. And if what we're holding in mind is rooted in ignorance, then that energy, and action really is what means karma, what defines karma. If what we're holding in mind is still ignorant, the only thing that feeling property is going to create and give substance to is further ignorance. But if what we're holding in mind is framed by the Eightfold Path, we're able to see what's occurring clearly, then the past intentional act that might be moderating something towards grasping or clinging and maintaining will be able to be interrupted by what we're holding in mind, meaning a well-concentrated mind developed through right meditation and framed by the Eightfold Path. So, you know, I want to unmute both of you because there's only two of you on. So I want to ask if there's any questions about that. So I'm going to do that now. If I can figure out how to do it. There you are. Unmute Lorna and unmute Maura. Okay, so you both can talk now if you want. Good evening. Oh, Lorna didn't get unmuted. There you are. So good evening. I'm glad you both could join tonight. Do you have any questions so far about what I've read? No.
It's Lorna here, John.
Hi, Lorna.
Hi. Had a little technical difficulty getting to you today, so just catching up with you.
Oh, okay.
I know what you mean, but practicing it is a different thing, you know.
Yeah,
it's not really clear in my mind enough for me to get hold of my thought, recognize my thoughts, get hold of my thoughts, and take another action. It's not clear enough in my mind for me to do.
Let me finish the sutta then, and we'll talk a little bit more about the proper and the practical application of the Eightfold Path and how it relates to this. So
yeah.
Maura, how are you tonight?
I'm well.
Okay. Any questions so far?
No.
Okay. Let me finish the sutta then.
Okay.
Ananda, if there were no karma ripening within the feeling property, would the feeling property even be noticed? In other words, there'd be no reaction in the mind. "No, wise teacher," Ananda said. "In this way, karma is the field, consciousness the seed, and craving is the moisture." Again, related back to dependent origination. Karma is a field. Karma is something that we are feeding in one way or another. We're giving it sustenance, and we're providing whatever is going to grow in that field. And so it's just a metaphor for us, for our own mind. Consciousness is the seed means what we are holding in mind. And if it's consciousness rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, what's going to grow? From craving, we're only going to create further clinging and maintaining. It's such a profound sutta. The Buddha continues, "The consciousness of human beings rooted in ignorance and bound by craving is established in wrong view." There's no ambiguity about that, is there? It's established in wrong view because it's rooted in ignorance. Established in wrong view, renewed becoming is produced. That's why I said earlier that what the Buddha's Dhamma ultimately takes us to is a potential that each moment has. And that potential is either to continue ignorance by ignoring Four Noble Truths, or to become and so become further ignorant, or to develop the Eightfold Path and become awakened. Establishing wrong view, renewed becoming is produced. If we do something to stop renewing that ignorance, we become awakened. The Buddha says, if there is no karma ripening in the form property, would the form property even be noticed? Again, this is also relating back to the five clinging aggregates. Ananda says, no, wise teacher, in this way, karma is a field, consciousness the seed, and craving the moisture. The consciousness of human beings, rooted in ignorance and bound by craving, is established in wrong view. Established in wrong view, renewed becoming is produced. If there is no karma ripening in the formless property, would the formless property be noticed? No, wise teacher, in this way, karma is the field, consciousness the seed, and craving the moisture. The consciousness of human beings, rooted in ignorance and bound by craving, is established in wrong view. Established in wrong view, renewed becoming of ignorance is produced. Again, the Buddha's emphasizing this singularly important point, three different ways to Ananda, that if we continue to ignore what the Buddha taught, now again, he's talking to his cousin within the original Sangha, and there was still some speculative and supposition with even within the Sangha and perhaps even with Ananda to want to do something else or to at least understand the gravity of not practicing this simple and direct Eightfold Path and so continue to become further ignorant. So, excuse me. Let me unmute you. I'm unmuting you, Lorna, and I'll unmute Maura if you want to be unmuted. Lorna, do you see now that understanding from the point of view of dependent origination, that a mind rooted in ignorance can really only go in one direction, towards fabrications and ultimately to creating moments of confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering? Do you see then how a right meditation practice developed for concentration only? Oh, somebody's making some noise there. Do you see how the Eightfold Path is the path to ending ignorance of Four Noble Truths and developing awakening? Yes? Does anybody hear me?
Very vaguely. There's a lot of background, John.
Coming from my end? Because, I'm in a quiet room, so I think it might be on your end.
This house is very quiet. I don't know where the interference... Anyway, it's gone now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you clear. Do you see how the Eightfold...
Let me answer the question. I got your question. From ignorance, meaning dependent origination, I do see that from ignorance of the Four Noble Truths, you can only create more ignorance. And I do get the purpose of that we're looking at tonight. Karma is the field, consciousness the seed, craving the moisture, meaning they're the components that an ignorant mind needs to maintain. You could put it that way.
Yes.
When I look at karma is the field, consciousness the seed, craving the moisture, I look at consciousness being the seed. I wish I could change my consciousness to an enlightened consciousness so that I could see the field and I could see moisture, because I can't see them in my thinking. Maybe this sutta is just quirky in a way that I'm not just quite seeing it clearly. maybe another simpler way for me to see this teaching is when we look at the five clinging aggregates, form, feeling, perceptions, mental fabrications, consciousness. Good. This is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am.
Yes.
I can relate to that perhaps a little bit better than trying to see the field or the karma being the field, the conscience, and then the, it's the same, it's talk about the same problem, but I can't see, karma, consciousness, and craving as the moisture in my thinking.
Well, here's the simple way of looking at this, because and to kind of boil it down. What the Buddha is teaching Ananda and all of us, you know, 2,600 years later, is that what we hold in mind will determine whether we become further ignorant or whether we become awakened. And then he gave us very specific teachings of what it is to hold in mind. And that is simply the framework of the Eightfold Path. And, you know, remember when we were... I can't remember now. They run together. When we went over the Upada Sutta, the Sutta on an Admirable Sangha, and how explicit the Buddha was to Ananda, that what it means to have admirable friends as the whole of Dhamma practice, but that within that admirable friends has to be the established Dhamma to guide our way. In this way, the Buddha is teaching Ananda basically the same thing, but to be well focused on seeing things clearly and to let go of any type of self-identification to what's occurring, to simply be clear and present with things. Does that help?
Yes, it does. But the whole thing is a little bit baffling to me. I know times, for some reason, I am in right view. And I have a very pleasant mind that's not questioning and choosing and judging, etc., etc., etc. So I am right view in that sense.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, you.
Sometimes I don't know why it happens. I am not really.
Well, there's the thing that could be a distraction, because you're looking for why it's happened. It's happened because you've put in 2.5 years, maybe 3 years now, I don't remember, of ardent Dhamma practice. And so, of course, you're seeing things differently and looking at things. That's the whole point, is going from wrong view to right view. So the fact that it's not 100%, that you still have an occasional disturbance in your mind, doesn't mean that you haven't progressed. It simply means that there's still a little bit of work to do. That's all.
Yeah. But I just can't say, I understand, from what I understand karma is, I know karma, the fact that I have karma, I'm in wrong view or I'm unawakened.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give a class on karma soon, because that's not quite the right way to look at karma. karma is, like all things, everything in the Buddha's Dhamma is completely impersonal, including your karma. In other words, karma is the present moment unfolding of past intentional actions. Those are actions that you did as a person. Or maybe a more clear way of describing that is that because of a conditioned mind. In other words, you might have walked down a street yesterday, and because you got angry, you slapped your neighbor. That doesn't mean that today you're gonna have to get slapped by your neighbor to balance the scales. It means that you have now created an imprint in your mind that's going to manifest in some way, maybe similar, maybe not. It just means that there's an agitation holding in your mind. As we use the right meditation to deepen our concentration, and develop right view, free of any of the conceptual applications, as we see things clearly, our conditioned mind falls away. And so we're no longer feeding that field of karma and creating any more craving. Does that help?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so karma is not personal in any way either, except it's what we're holding in our mind that's creating the word. Again, karma is such a misunderstood and misapplied teaching as well, that it's some kind of behavior punishment system. You know, it's just not that. It has nothing to do with it, and it's completely impersonal. Let's give Maura a chance. Maura, I'm glad you joined tonight.
Hi.
Hi, Maura. Let me look at it. There you are. I can't see you from back here. How are you? You have any questions or comments?
I have any questions, because not to say that I understand this fully, but this is something we've gone over quite a bit, right? I can't always articulate it exactly formally in a way that, but I mean, again, the way that the suttas, the whole idea, right, again, is that we have a choice in every moment. If we are holding the Eightfold Path in mind and using that as a framework, I don't know if I'm understanding more than that correctly, but I'll just say from my that there's also Kushanti, right? We have Kushanti, we have patience, and the fact that in order we're developing, so I'm developing a more consistent level of mindfulness. It's more consistent. Karma as a field, again, is what is the potential, is what's in ripening. The seed is there of consciousness. I have a choice with some wisdom, choosing to not follow repetitive conditioned ways of increasing craving and clinging. And I can see that. I can see it happening in my meditation, in my life. It's not 100%, and that's okay. It's a process of becoming Buddha, right?
Hence the name of the book.
I know. So we're becoming awakened. I find, again, this teaching and this the integrity of this application of karma, the most powerful and optimistic part of all of Buddha's teaching.
It is. You see the boy?
It's like we have, as has been said so many times in this class and by you, we have the power to think what we want to think when we want to think.
That's it. The Vitaka Sintana Sutta.
Right? We're observing thoughts that are leading to tranquility and, you know, non-clinging and restraint, and we're, you know, we're directing and metta, and, you know, all of this is, as we always talk about, these banks that hold the Eightfold Path as this framework that steers the mind and consciousness into more likely, we're more likely to let go of clinging and craving, but it's more likely to happen. So the field is less. What did you say in the sutta? What the Buddha was saying, like if there's a lot of karma ripening, I missed that. I heard it, but I can't remember.
Well, in each of the different properties, if there is no karma ripening in the formless property, is karma present? No, there isn't, because it's not, because it, and really what that refers to again is what we're holding in mind, because that's really what's going to produce additional karma. You mentioned mindfulness before. The Buddha taught that very refined mindfulness relates directly to each factor. It's not some generalized, oh, well, I got to be mindful of washing the dishes or driving the car. I mean, those are all good things, But, yeah. You know, everybody does that or should be doing it. We need to be mindful of the Eightfold Path in relation to what we're doing. And so we diminish our karma. Do you see the, you see Bodes?
Yeah, hi Bodes. And mindfulness is a very large and complex component.
Did you say karma? I'm sorry.
No, I said mindfulness. It can't be reduced to the one simple thing.
It's pretty simple.
Well, I'm just done.
Okay. Yes.
So just saying, from my understanding, and I don't think it's an embellished point of view or anything.
Hey,
Dan. Mindfulness is not that, you know, Sati has different translations, but I'm talking about the way that you teach it, etc. Right? So, but seeing things, I mean, I find that either in daily life or in meditation practice, with right mindfulness and the right framework and developing concentration, that more and more things, more and more, in the seen is only the seen, and in the hurt.
Well,
is only the hurt.
It got a little bit. Could you say it over again? It got a little bit garbled. Just like one sentence.
Actually, I don't even think I want to say it, because if I say it, it'll somehow it won't be said correctly, and then we'll get in this loop. So I would just, I think this is a really great sutta, and I think that I understand it. I apply it, and when I reach for some type of satisfaction and I attach myself to something out of ignorance, recognizing that is what has occurred, and watching the results of an agitated mind and making a determination to abandon that behavior.
That's pretty good.
I just think we have to be kind and gentle, as we always say, and not expect that in every moment we're going to be awakened, not have these pullings of the mind. You know, stuff is ripening, and we have an opportunity to work with it skillfully as it ripens.
Yeah, that's right. I say this a lot in class, especially, you know, in the last year, Lorna would know that the great freedom that comes from simply integrating the Eightfold Path and actually doing that, because then we know we're doing all that we can do. We don't have to second guess ourselves. We can truly be gentle with ourselves because we know what we're doing. All we need to do then is, like Ananda did, is continue with our Dhamma practice. You know, we know that's what taking true refuge really means, that too. It's a way of understanding the how and why of being gentle with ourselves. We have decided that we're moving from ignorance to wisdom. So, wow, that was a great discussion with the three of us. Lorna,
John? John?
Yes, Lorna.
Moira just said something then that I have never thought of.
What's that?
What I was trying to explain when I said I can't see karma, what the sutra is about, seeing karma as the field, consciousness as the seed, craving the moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And that scenario events happening in my mind, I can't see it. Moira has said, and brought that into meditation. She said, when your mind, she said something about meditation and seeing the karma in meditation. And, you know, I've never thought about that. Never thought about looking for calm in my meditation. Now, when I think about it, you can see your karma in
I don't know.
I can see it clearly in my mind in meditation.
Lorna, I don't, not to change the subject, are you using an external microphone? No.
What do you mean?
Do you have a microphone that you're plugging into whatever device you're using?
No, I've just got my phone.
Okay, because it was kind of breaking up a little bit there. But Laura, Moore, do you want to comment on that?
Well, I'm... I really hesitate to go like again if I don't. I feel like I understand it, but you know, I might use a word correctly. But I from what I see in meditation as well, that each repetitive cycle of craving thoughts, like the hindrances as they come up or something, part of that is karma ripening. Right? You know, it's what we have a choice then in meditation also to continue with right concentration, right meditation.
Yeah, I think, is that what you mean, Lorna, too, that whatever, you could say that whatever's coming up that is potential for distraction is karma. In other words, a feeling arises and passes away, but you attach yourself to it. That's an aspect of karma in that way, because it's obviously something that has imprinted your mind in the past, and you're carrying it through into the present moment. So, of course, in meditation, as you're deepening jhana, as you're deepening concentration and these things come up to catch your mind, that would definitely be a form of karma. So that's an astute way of looking at it that Maura is describing. And is that what your understanding is, Lorna?
What I was referring back to about meditation, I think I know how I work my mind in meditation. And I work it from the point of I'm thinking, therefore come back to my breath. Just very simply, when you catch yourself on a thought, just come back to your breath. And that's my soul meditation. I can see now that the craving, the karma, which is coming from the sort of like the previous moment, passing over it, this moment, transferring, and I'm either on a thought or looking for a thought, and then the moisture, which is what I'm putting into that situation, and therefore what will come out of the next into the next moment. And I can see the pattern of what we're talking about tonight. I can see it more clearly in my meditation. But when I get out in the world, I can't see karma and I can't see moisture and I can't, you know, it's just like too much.
Well, this is the sutta is somewhat given in the abstract, so it's always difficult to take something in the abstract and apply it into practical life. So the notion is to just be well concentrated and frame what you're experiencing moment by moment from the Eightfold Path. Go ahead, Maura.
I'm sorry, being very interrupted.
No, you're all right. That's the nature of the platform, I think.
Well, also, so one of the things that I would say, Lorna, that I have also found is even in meditation, and this is just me, you may be further along in concentration than I am, but I can see the subtle craving of wanting to hold on to stillness or like a pleasant meditation. It'll creep in there. Even that is, so when I kind of can feel that little piece of subtle craving, oh, this is nice, I want to hold on to it. Like that too is, you know, if I don't see that little subtle piece coming up and I go back to the breath and whatever's arising and passing, the feeling stays, you know, vedanas and whatever, I will become, I'll kind of further that, oh my God, whatever sutta I was reading this morning about, I can't think of it right now, but, I'm losing that distracted thought. But the basic thing is to again just to keep staying with this boring breath, which is not so boring, not the label we put onto it, but if I can still just really work with the mind in meditation, I know that also I am lessening further karma of craving and clinging, so I'm extinguishing that piece. And then what I find in life, there is more space around conditioned responses. So the karma, I still see karma, whether it's food or people or ideas or anything or comfort or, you know, like wanting to hold on to comfort or wanting something to be different. It's the same karma. It's the same field. Consciousness makes contact. I'm either going to choose to act on it or have a recollection of mindfulness and right intention of right fear, and open up and just kind of settle into it.
Yeah, so... Lauren, what you just said, I would encourage you. You were talking about getting to a pleasant place in your meditation, and then questioning that. I would, if you haven't already, I think you'd get benefit out of reading some of the articles that we just covered on jhana. There's a whole section on it. You're shaking your head no?
Yeah, okay. No, because I don't think I was questioning pleasant. Sukha is very important. It's very important to recognize what actions I have taken. Talk about karma, right?
Well, no, but I'm talking about it within the, okay, within the framework of meditation, it's, okay. Lorna, what do you think about that?
I think I kind of got a bit lost there. I'm just basics, trying to absorb from the Buddha. He was a very clever guy. He's explaining knows in as clear a way as he can. It's just not obvious to me right now what he is explaining. But maybe next week.
Yeah, well, and you know, in reference to what Maura was saying, what, you know, that series we went through on jhana, just recognizing the different levels of jhana. That's all that they're there for. They're not, you know, there's nothing else that you do with it. You just recognize, and it's really taught to keep us focused on meditation as a concentration practice and nothing else. So,
right. So what I'm saying is sometimes not in jhana necessarily, but just noticing a pleasant sensation and feeling and wanting to hold on to that. That's craving and clinging, John.
Sure it is.
It is. And that happens in meditation. Oh, it's leaking. I want to hold on to it a little bit more. So that's what I was referring to. I think I understand. You know, I've heard the series on jhana. It's not like I'm not questioning or trying to create something or do more of something. You do recognize that absorption is there. You don't have to, but sometimes wanting to hang on to something can create selfing and clinging and craving and further suffering.
Sure.
Ignorance. That's what I was getting at.
That's very good. Well, I would say thank you both for joining tonight. It was a great discussion and a really important sutta. The part three will be next week. I did just today post the last week's talk on the Loka Sutta. So that's up on YouTube too. And I'll post these later. And Lorna, the Saturday's class, we're going to do that Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta again, but we'll do it in two parts starting Saturday. So you're going to get a double dose of that sutta. So.
That would be great, John.
Yeah, that was really remarkable Tuesday night, wasn't it? Everybody said, we just want more of it. We want to get into it deeper. So, and Maura, thank you for joining tonight. I'm glad you joined.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for everything, John.
Thank you. Have a good evening, both of you. Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.